There was once a great American named George Henderson. He met a woodland ape, or Sasquatch, and despite its dangerous message of environmentalism, became his friend. But when the time came to do the hard thing and send it back into the forest where it belonged, and birds could perch on its shoulder because it was gentle, George Henderson summoned the strength, and by God, he did it. Did it hurt? You bet it hurt. Like a bastard. But he did it because it was the right thing to do. For the woodland ape. You think about that.
What?
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Is that Harry and the Hendersons?
You've seen it.
What are your thoughts on the British Bigfoot? Because that's certainly a source of contentious debate. I mean, people have witnessed the Bigfoot there, but other people, like our mutual friend Nick Redfern, he seems to think that there's an interdimensional or paranormal aspect to this. So, I mean, what do you think of the British Bigfoot?
Hmm. Well, you know, I really like and respect Nick as a starting point, but I think it's fair to say we'd have different opinions. I think that these creatures are real animals, although nothing, yeah. I've never seen any evidence for an interdimensional creature, yeah. I've never seen a ghost. I've never seen anything scientifically to say that there's an interdimensional creature. So I have problems in believing that there are. It's not to diss anybody else's view, you know. As I say, yeah. I respect Nick.
Right.
And you know, when he mentions things about interdimensional creatures, I will listen. You know, I will listen, and I'm interested in what he has to say. But I just think they're real creatures or they're nothing. Now, the idea of a British Bigfoot, the problem I have with that is we don't have enough space in this country for groups of hominids to exist. You know, it's as simple as that. I'd rather be wrong than right, as I would in any of these situations.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so again, if people want to go and research that, then I'm cool with that. But I myself wouldn't research it because I don't find the idea of them to be plausible.
That seems to be the predominant thing, that there's not enough space for them.
Not enough space. There's not enough space or habitat.
Right.
That food, I could see that they could exist without being discovered, you know? I mean, there are wildernesses here, but and certainly in Scotland, but nothing on the scale of North America, I think it's fair to say. And I'm not aware of substantive legends of them. You know, you hear things of the Green Man and things like that go back a number of centuries, but I've not seen anything that is more substantive than mythology around them rather than real evidence. And I've heard about people seeing big things with red eyes and things like that, but that isn't consistent to me. It's often an individual eyewitness, or it's a concentration of sightings and then something disappears, yeah?
Hmm.
So that's more Nick's sort of area of speciality rather than my own. I'm interested in proving real animals really exist.
There you go. Now, what about in this, you've talked about a lot of interesting sort of audio evidence, if you will, from the trip to America, but there's no, as far as I know, as far as you haven't mentioned anything, there's no actual, like, audio recordings of any of this stuff or video footage of just the trip at all, like, where you might have captured some of these weird incidents on tape.
Well, there kind of is,
okay.
In the sense that in exactly the same area, Laurie and her friend Bonnie went up to the area in July. I think we were there in September. I can't remember the exact date, but she was there in some time over summer. And she recorded an alleged growl in the same place as we were. So, and that's on YouTube. So, so there is. And,
okay.
You know, when we were there at the very end, we were, you know, I told you that there was that growling and that activity. Laurie recorded some of that on her phone, and she'll get those growls analysed, you know. And when I go in February, we'll be taking some equipment then. So if it does growl again, we'll do a really comprehensive job of capturing that sound. So, you know, I'm going in 5 weeks' time. And if I get a growl, you can guarantee it'll be recorded very thoroughly.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah, because that's sort of like the next point. What's next for you to do on the American trips? I mean, you want to get back in this area and what? Try and get better evidence?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, that's
steps,
kind of
little
a,
steps.
Yeah.
I think little steps. I mean, it's important for me to emphasize that, you know, I'm going in February primarily to see Laurie, rather than going on an expedition, but I will be going up in that area. And when I go up in that area, I'll do my best for the limited time on there. After that, I'm sure I'll come back again as soon as I can afford it. But yeah, if you're asking me what the immediacy is going there again in 5 weeks' time.
Yeah. All right. Nice. Sounds good. So you're gonna be haunting America for quite a while.
I'm gonna be in America. Yeah, I'm gonna be in America or Canada. There's another area I'm particularly interested in, around the Native American areas in Canada. So that might be an option to look at in the future as well. But right now it's the Pacific Northwest.
Well, it's kind of chilling in a way because, you know, you think of the Orang Pendek as sort of this docile little guy that's sort of hiding out in the jungle, and he doesn't sound too scary, but then you're out here in America and it's like, oh no, you're dealing with the American cryptids now, pal. We're gonna scare the shit out of you.
Yeah. Your food's better though. I can put up with it. I can have a burger in America. Yeah. Fish heads or slightly softer Orang Pendek. Bigger and more aggressive creature or a burger. I'll have the burger, you know, I'll go for and a coffee.
Now I guess the only like idea that I could have, I'm trying to play devil's advocate here.
Yeah, go for it.
You know, the only way that if this was like some kind of fakery and you didn't know about it, the only way that Laurie could have pulled it off is just to have somebody else in the woods messing with you guys. And that doesn't sound logistically feasible.
No, and that's a good point. I mean, I think you're completely right to bring that up because I consider that myself. But that was why I was keen to emphasize to you that it happened all day, and well, not all day, but it happens at different times of the day and night. Yeah, and there was one particular instance because the same thing had obviously crossed my mind, especially when I was going to be asked about it. And Laurie and I would sit by the river sometimes and talk, and we got knocking sounds from a high ridge, yeah. So what would have had to have happened there is somebody would have had to have scaled that ridge in the night using mountaineering equipment. I would have seen him because it was up a cliff face, or to tap a tree for 10 minutes, yeah. And they would have to have been in different places. So, as I say, if that was going to be pulled off as some sort of delusional thing, it would have to have been a big cast with rope climbing equipment over several weeks nearly, in order to do that, and it just wouldn't have been achievable. I don't think Laurie would have had the thousands of pounds of resources and team behind her in order to do that.
Right. What would be the motivation? Because you're not like paying her to bring you out to these places, right?
Yeah.
So
there wouldn't be any motivation. There wouldn't be any benefit to her to continually do it anyway. I mean, think about it logically. If she was going to do that, she could have achieved her aim in the first couple of nights, couldn't she? I mean, 8 or 9 nights later, why would she be doing that? Why would she be getting anyone to carry on doing that?
Right, right. Well, it's interesting, too, because it sounds like she's clearly well-versed in the Bigfoot mythos, if you will. But upon seeing the picture, it sounds like, you know, you say she wanted to get the hell out of there, so that's even more.
Yeah, she wanted to go. I mean, her hand was trembling, and she was, she was looking at it through her fingers.
Yeah.
It was as simple as that.
I'd probably have a similar reaction, too. I'd be like, okay, that's enough, Adam. Let's get the hell out of here.
The second night, this will, you'll relate to this, right? So the second night, that was when the image was taken, yeah. So the third night, we thought, well, we'll recreate, we'll see if we can, see if it'll come in again, yeah? So we did the same thing. I mean, later on, we tried it with different members of the team. They slept by, they all rotated, but the third night, Laurie and I slept there again. And Laurie went to sleep pretty much straight away. And I'm lying there awake thinking, shit, everyone's gone to bed. Yeah, asleep, yeah. This bloody big thing is going to come in. He could rip me to pieces in a second, and I'm lying here waiting for it. We're in North America. We're not even in the Congo. Or Sumatra. We're in North America. I could go an hour and a half, 2 hours drive and get a burger. And here I am, worried about some big creature. It was freaky.
It's, yeah. Like I said, to see that picture, I'd be like, I can't, you know. I wouldn't be able to sleep at all. I'd be like, all right.
I managed to get to sleep eventually, but, you know, by and large, it was enormous fun. Obviously, Sandy got the caterpillar hairs in his eye, and he's had to have surgery a few times on that, so that was quite intense for him.
Yeah.
But we all felt bad for him for that. And obviously, I think that will probably affect him in some ways for the rest of his life. But that only is, you know, in that sense, you sort of think, again, why would somebody suffer so much and make up some bullshit? do you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
He really suffered for that. And that was a freak accident. That was one of those woolly caterpillars. I think it dropped in his eye when he was out one night away from where we were doing some night observation. So, but hopefully...
the pictures are brutal. It looks like probably one of the worst injuries on your trips.
Yeah, ironically it is. I mean, I've been hospitalized before, as you know. But I've recovered... I'm pleased to say recovered fully. I mean, that's something that will stay with him. That's a scar that will stay with him. And it is. I mean, the whole thing about the North America experience for me was completely nothing like I expected, as I said to you.
Yeah.
My thought about the whole thing was, well, this is going to be a pretty easy gig. I'm just going to be able to chill out. it's a nice place. It's really beautiful. Looking at the pictures that Laurie had sent me in advance. I'll have a nice time. I like Laurie. It'll be fun, you know. Get some decent food. Be fun, be a nice gig, you know, and it's just a learning experience. None of it I expected to happen.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like it was really, you know, completely different, like you just said, from what you expected. Now, you didn't see the Bigfoot, though. So we still have that off the... You heard the Bigfoot, possibly, but you did not see anything...
Well, I heard the creature. I'm going to call it the creature.
Yeah, yeah.
Heard the creature, saw it take food. Apparently, it was right up over us when we were sleeping, but I never saw it. But I'm going to make damn sure I try and see it.
Yeah, absolutely. Now you say you saw it take the food. How does that work?
No, I mean, as in the sense that would be put out for it, and then it would disappear. Yeah.
Now, why didn't? Now, maybe you guys did this. Maybe you didn't. I don't know. But how come I would put the trail cam
over the food? Yeah,
yeah.
Exactly. I don't know the answer to your question. How that disappeared? Yeah, I don't know.
Oh, it didn't. So there was a trail cam. It just didn't.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah, there was.
That's odd.
Right over it, Tim. I mean, I'll tell you everything.
Believe me. You're amongst friends here, don't
worry. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, right over it. I don't know how it disappeared, because even if somebody was going to take it, it would be on the camera trap. Do you know what I mean?
Weird.
So I cannot explain that, no.
That is odd. We're dealing with a weird creature here, this the Bigfoot. I know that you don't... I know that you're sort of on the flesh and blood side, but I still hold out a little, I still have a foot in the paranormal camp, so...
Yeah, I know, and I understand that. Absolutely. That's why I say I'm always prepared to listen to what your thoughts about it were and what Nick's are. I can't explain it. I mean, the other thing I'd say is it demonstrates superior hearing as well, because when Laurie and I were set up in its area one time... And there were a couple of the others were coming towards it. It started to tap furiously. It went do, 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 do. And then they came around the corner a minute or so later. So it obviously heard them approaching before we had. Again, so there's lots of things I could tell you about its behaviour. It sort of cascades out as I'm talking to you in conversation. If you know what I mean.
Yeah. Well, it's odd. It's really, I'm just
it's
trying
really
to wrap
strange.
My mind.
I mean,
I'm actually very envious here, hearing all these stories, because I'm sure a lot of people are, because this sounds like quite the, a lot of people go out and never see anything or hear anything, you know?
It's amazing. I mean, you know from our conversations, because we've talked a lot over the last few years, I'm not given to hyperbole, you know. I don't like inflate things. I've said it as it is. You know, for example, I've been on Radio Scotland, and I'm quite prepared to say the Loch Ness Monster doesn't exist, yeah? Hmm. If I'd found bugger all, I would have said, well, I found bugger all. And that would have been it, as I have done on other expeditions I've gone on.
Yeah.
I don't need to make shit up. In fact, it's detrimental for me to do so, in order, because of all the good stuff that I've done with things like the Orang Pendak. But by the same token, it's really important that I tell the facts as I saw them as they were. And I'm telling you as they were. And I'm probably telling you as they were right now in more depth than I have actually discussed it with anybody. I mean, when I first came back to England, I only told my friends about it in dribs and drabs, you know?
Yeah.
Because the whole thing about it being that close to me when I was asleep was quite difficult to recount. And I don't think I told the full detail of it for a while. And I don't think I've actually gone through this much detail with anybody, other than obviously the people who were there and Laurie.
Yeah.
Since I've come back, so you know, it's in some ways it's not always the easiest thing for me to discuss, which might surprise you, but that's the way it is.
Because of what? Because of sort of your uneasiness with all that went down.
Yeah, I'm a bit uneasy about it.
Yeah.
I'm a bit uneasy about it because it shocked me, and it sort of. It's had to make me think a lot about what I know about existence. I always want to believe in the existence of creatures, but also about their abilities and their sentience.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't have batted an eyelid if I'd got a photograph of the Orang Pendak. Not an eyelid. I would have been thrilled. That would have been it, though.
Right.
But with this, the things that have happened have really astounded me.
It definitely sounds like more of a, like something beyond an animal.
Well,
like something, like you said, with some sentience.
Yeah, I mean, it to me, I mean, I as you know, I've seen things like orangs and gorillas and stuff like that in the wild. And to me, it seems to develop, it seems to have a sentience that is more advanced than they are. Exactly where that would be pitched, I don't know. That's why I'm so fascinated. Well, not just why, but that's one of the reasons why I'm personally fascinated about, you know, if we can pull that DNA off, what it might mean.
Exactly,
would work. I'm really, really, on a personal level, just enormously curious. Enormously curious. I want to know about it because it's so remarkable.
Well, that brings up a whole nother sort of kettle of fish, if you will, and that's this DNA story that was the big story towards the end of the year. What do you make of the Melba Ketchum DNA controversy?
I make this of it. I'd like her to succeed because she spent 5 years of her life, as I understand it, trying to succeed. Yeah. And as I said to you, I really don't. You know, before. I'd love one of the samples that I've been associated with in some way to be one of the samples that proves the existence of one of these creatures. But if it's somebody else's sample, then great. You know, I'm not that precious about it. Just prove the bloody thing and let's all relax, yeah? But the problem, I think, at the moment is that she's got an issue with peer review, I think, because of the way it's been leaked out. And people are questioning her integrity, the integrity of her research. And the longer it stays in a limbo, the harder it is for her. So I think she will have to publish fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Because if she leaves it any longer, it's going to knock the credibility of her research even more. And she's having a lot of hard balls thrown at her. So I'd like it to succeed, but... Yeah, I'm not so sure that she will, you know, but I'd hope she does. Right now I'm putting my money on Sykes.
Well, it's interesting. It seems like there's a lot of people getting on the DNA thing now. It's like that it seems like they realize that might be the only good direction to turn since we don't have much else.
Well, it's the best direction to turn, you know. I mean, let's say I produce another Patterson-Gimlin film, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Let's say it happens, right? There will be people who will say, yes, it's genuine, marvellous, well done. There'll be people who say it's bullshit. You know, do you know what I mean? Where does it really take us? Yeah, where does it really take us? It might be interesting, but it doesn't really take us anywhere. What are the chances of walking into a body of one of these creatures? Yeah, I'm not going to shoot one, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
So what's the chances of me actually walking into one? Well, how often, you know, do you walk and stumble across the body of any dead animal? Yeah.
Right.
Forget one that's exceptionally rare. It happens hardly ever, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not going to happen. What you can do, though, is get hair, fur, whatever you want to call it, and from that, you know, if you've got a medulla on it, you can get DNA. So, and that would be enough to push the manifold forward. It would be enough to push the debate forward. So photographs always are really interesting, and I they tell a great story, but they don't really prove anything. They don't.
Well, I feel like, too, though, that we talked about the giggle factor. I feel like the DNA is even still won't help with Bigfoot. Orang Pendek's sort of a different story, because like we talked about, it's sort of this isolated, more believable creature, I guess. You know what I mean? It's, for lack of a better term. And with the Bigfoot, it's got all this baggage and everything. So even if they, I mean, you saw some of the mainstream coverage of the DNA story, the Bigfoot DNA Ketchum story, where it was just, you know. Even if everything that she put out was on the up and up and perfect and well done and all that, you know, seems like they still don't give it the credence that it deserves.
And I understand that, but I think there's a difference between, very respectfully, between Melba Ketchum and Professor Sykes.
Yeah.
In the sense that Professor Sykes is the world's leading geneticist. He is the best in the world, in his field.
Mm-hmm.
So you would have some problems. I accept, Tim, that people will question the veracity of his research, but it would be much harder with the best in the world.
Right, right.
Saying it. I don't have any inside information. I'm not going to try and say that he's going to tell me what the results of his research are. He won't do. He'll get it peer-reviewed, etc., and I don't even know whether he's going to get anything or not. He might not. But let's say he does, so let's speak in hypotheses. There will always be people who question it. There will always be people who say habeas corpus. I understand that. But, you know, if he publishes it, then I think that will take it forward, because I think that will cause a shift, yeah? Call me the optimist if you want, but I do.
Well, I'm hopeful, yeah. I mean, I'm optimistic about that too, but I'm also, you know...
Yeah, you're rightly cautious, and I understand why.
Yeah.
I understand. You have every reason to sort of think, well, you know, what's the situation with that? I completely understand.
Right, right. Well, it's ironic, because the difficult part is it's a public relations issue more than it is a science issue.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's an extremely difficult thing to get your head around. But what can me and you do about that? We can just wait, yeah? We can just wait and see. And hope, yeah? In that sense, but in the meantime, try and gather more evidence about what is a remarkable area and of research. You know, over the years, I've been to all these different places, and I don't regret a single damn second of it. I've had amazing time doing it, and you know, and I am optimistic. I really do hope that 2013 will be a significant year. I really do.
Well, it does feel... I was talking to Greg Bishop about this, doing a year-in-review sort of show a few weeks ago, or a few days ago now, and, you know, it does feel like Bigfoot, that cryptozoology and Bigfoot, they're sort of... it's sort of on the cusp. It's kind of got some good momentum behind it. It's on the up, definitely.
It's on the up. It's on the up in all sorts of areas. And, you know, let's hope... I've never been pessimistic. I mean, I've charted the progress that's been made with the Orang Pendek, so that's got better and better, I think, as the years have gone on. So it's not like, you know, in the Bigfoot community that they often talk about false dawns. Well, I've never really experienced that, and I think it's got better with the Orang Pendek. And, you know, I hope for all the many years of research that people have done in this area that they do get something that's substantive. I really do. And wherever it comes from, I will cheer it on.
Now, I think last year you were talking about maybe doing some more work looking at some sea creatures. I take it that didn't come together.
No, I mean what I normally do is I normally plan a couple of things and see how they pan out.
Right.
And it just came down. One of the reasons I didn't go towards Norway, I was going to go back towards the Celluloid Serpent, I think, was cost. It was going to cost me as much to go to Norway as it was to go to North America.
Oh, wow.
I'd not been to North America before, yeah? So, and by that stage, I'd built up that relationship with Laurie. So, I decided I'd go to North America. And that was why it was mechanics and costs, and as it turned out, it was probably the best decision I ever made.
It would seem that way, yeah.
Mm.
Absolutely, mm-hmm. Yeah.
From a personal point of view, I mean, I've seen the Celluloid Serpent, as you know, I've seen it once, the only cryptid I have seen. And it was like, well, where could I take this story much further? I was just interested in seeing if I could get anything better, but. You know, the whole North America thing has completely changed my outlook, so really glad I went. I'm really glad I turned right instead of left, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, because it would have been a completely different...
We would have had a completely different show, talking about something completely different, and none of that would have happened.
So do you have, what sort of, we're not wrapping up yet, but you know, just to sort of keep the conversation going here, what, you know, what's on the agenda here for the new year? What kind of stuff do you have cooking, aside from the trip back here to the States in February?
Well, nothing at the moment. It's really gone as far as going to see Laurie in February. After that, I'll have a think and sort of see where it goes from there. I've had a load of other things to sort out life-wise over the last year or so, and so that's taken a lot of my energy. So we'll see what happens in February. I mean, right now, if you're asking me to sort of pinpoint exactly what's most likely, then what's most likely is I'll carry on doing some research in North America.
Nice.
And take it that way. That's what I would imagine I'll end up doing.
Now, you were up in the Pacific Northwest. Have you considered, you said there, you know, there's another area in Canada you're interested in, but there's a whole lot of other places where, big, you know, Ohio is a pretty predominant Bigfoot type of place. Pennsylvania,
yeah,
there's get the Florida, the Swamp.
There's lots of places,
type of stuff, yeah.
Skin Cape in Florida. There's lots of places. You know, I'm fully aware it's a big country. I flew over it. It took a long time. there were plenty of places I could go. Yeah, absolutely. But right now, if I'm getting such good results in that one particular place, I'll probably go there for a bit and see what happens. But it's good. I'm making contact with more researchers and I'm learning more. It's important to say that I'm always keen to learn more off people who've been doing it for many number of years. I've done stuff in other places in the world, as you know, in different places in the world. But you know, I feel like I've scratched the surface in America, and so I'm keen to do more. And I like it. I like America. It's a good laugh. I have a good time.
Well, we like having you here.
Thank you, mate.
Now, do you beyond the trip to America, are there other sort of cryptids that you haven't had the chance to go after that you'd be, you know, that you, if money was no object, that you would do, you know, like places like Japan have quite a history of odd creatures or, you know, I'm just trying, I can't really come off the top of my head, but there's always something weird.
There's two things that I'd be interested in. One is the thylacine, the Tasmanian tiger in Australia.
Mm.
When I was in Australia, I met a farmer who was what they call a dinky die Aussie, you know, like really sort of straight laced, and he'd seen one of those on his farm. And there's a zoologist who saw one in Irangia as well. So I'd be interested in the Tasmanian tiger. There's also some stories that I need to explore more about a potential hominid living in some of the islands in the Pacific, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which I don't know an awful lot about, but I spoke to a judge one time who'd worked out there. And he said that in these really remote Pacific islands, you know, way out from Fiji, he talked about that there's a race of potential hominids in these remote islands that is rarely discussed and no one's ever really been to look for. That would interest me as well.
Yeah, that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, that'd be a good crack, because I don't think people have done that before. And I like doing stuff that, as you know, that people haven't done before. So I kind of looked into that very briefly, but that's possibly for the future sometime. We'll see.
Now, are these like hominids, like the Orang Pendek and Bigfoot, or are we talking like a lost tribe or something?
I'm not sure. If I had to guess, more like Flores Man. So small, yeah.
Mm.
But exactly what they weren't sure. But he said that, you know, this is a judge. It isn't somebody who's a Looney Tune. and he's because he'd worked there for a while, and he said that, you know, it was definitely something worth investigating, and gave me a couple of contacts, which I haven't yet pursued because I've been busy doing other stuff. So my knowledge on it is quite scant. I just know that I've got a credible lead from somebody who is very together, and that possibly could be something that I could take forward in the future.
Sounds interesting. Yeah, I've never heard of
this. Yeah, definitely, because it's not been done.
Yeah, very weird.
Very weird indeed. So those are the two things that immediately spring to mind as something that may be worth looking at in the future. But we'll see, because as you know, I never quite know in January where I was going to happen in the rest of the year.
Exactly. And, yeah. Well, I was going to say. I mean, who are we kidding, Adam? You're going to be in Sumatra in 6 months.
I'm not going to be in Sumatra. If you had to put money on where I'll be, Tim, you know where I'll be. You know where I'll be after what's happened to me.
It's pretty amazing that this has really changed. It's really changed the course of your research career in a lot of ways.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it has. Yeah. And it's changed everything about my course of research career, relationship, everything. So it's been a remarkable year in that sense. But it's exciting. It's exciting. I mean, it's exciting that that thing was there right on top of us as we slept. It's exciting that we heard those growls and those bumps. It's exciting that we're waiting for that potential DNA evidence off Laura's dad. It's amazing. This is what I, you know, this is what I'm about. This is what I went to look for. This is about testing the fold and pushing a boundary. And if I'm doing it in the US, then great, you know. All the comforts, all the excitement, none of the bad food.
Exactly, yeah. Well, you got to make your way here to New England.
I want to go to Boston. I was with mate John Carlson when we were in New York, and we all went back to New York, obviously, and I was hearing about what a nice city it was. So I'm keen to go, and I will do.
Yeah, and then you can head on up and check out the crypto museum up there in Maine.
Yeah, I'll have a look around that whole area. I'm keen to go. I'm keen to go over on the coast over there. It will be fun to do that. And I will. I promise you, I will go. Yeah. Just I can't tell you exactly when, but I promised you I'd do the North American stuff, and I've kept my word. So
absolutely.
I'll keep my word, Tim.
I know we're going to meet up. I'm not worried about it. I know.
Yeah, we'll do it. No, I know we will as well.
So will you? Just to circle back to all the controversy. It seems, you know. Well, it's ironic, I guess, with the Bigfoot community. There's a joke around here that if you don't like the weather, wait. You know, wait a day and it'll change. It's sort of like that with the Bigfoot community. It's like, well, mm-hmm. if there's some big controversy, give it a couple months and there'll be a whole nother one down the line. So it's interesting that, you know, this Ketchum thing came along and sort of all the people who were getting irate about your trail cam picture, that they just decided to get irate about something else.
Well, I think that as well, some of them were persuaded that either what we're saying is genuine, or that clearly we weren't hoaxing it, yeah?
Right.
And I think that the balance of argument might be, even with those who were critical, is that clearly they weren't hoaxing it, yeah? I mean, I don't think most people believe that now.
Right.
They might think I'm wrong, that's fine, but I don't think most people believe that now. I think once they'd looked into the background and research and stuff that I'd done previously, I think they thought, well, clearly that's not really a starter. But you know, again, all I can say is, yeah, I was surprised by the level of publicity it got, really. But I mean, it is an awesome, you know, from my point of view, it is an amazingly interesting photograph.
Oh, it's people are really quite a long time looking at it.
Yeah, people are always going to debate it, and that's cool. Just debate it with respect. That's all I'm saying. Cool. Say I'm wrong. Cool. Yeah, totally fine. But I know that there was a creature there. But I don't mind people disagreeing with it. Just say what you think, man, in a respectful way.
Right. That's the disappointing part about the community sometimes. I don't understand what drives the vitriol.
Well, I think, you know, I do understand it in the sense that if you look at other cryptids, there's been very few. I mean, there are always some hoaxes, like with Loch Ness. That's quite well known for a few fakes and things like that. But generally, with these things, there aren't that many. But the problem with anything associated with Bigfoot is there's been that many hoaxes over the years.
Right.
That if you get a good piece of footage, people are, their first instance is, well, it's a hoax unless it's proved otherwise, yeah? And I think that that's the default position that they adopt. And I understand that because it's almost like not wanting to shield themselves from potential disappointment. I mean, this is just an outside view, really, here. So I understand that. But I just think there are ways you could go about that. And one of the things we had was like pictures of us, like as hoaxes, like it was some sort of frigging Wild West movie, which was a load of bullshit, you know?
Yeah.
With people who hadn't even spoken to us or researched any of our background. Just thought, oh, that's bullshit. So, I mean, I don't want to dwell on that because I want to dwell on the positive aspect. But I think, you know, I've seen research from other people which I've thought has not been correct. Yeah, simple as that. Or I've doubted the photographs, but I have never, you know, ever gone and said, well, he's a liar. Yeah,
right.
I just think that that's vitriolic, and I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's necessary to be that, like that. You can say, well, I'm sorry, I don't believe that, or I think it was something else. And I think that that's a perfectly respectful approach, and there's no need to be very acidic, even with people that you think are wrong.
Exactly. So you've seen now the, just to circle back to the Finding Bigfoot, so that's going to be sometime in February. We'll see,
we'll see
your mug on TV again.
Yeah, I think it's February the 17th. Yeah, see me on TV. Yeah, I think it's February the 17th. And as I say, I've seen the reel, and I thought it was a good show. I mean, and they do genuinely trek. They earn their money. Yeah, I said to them, "You've earned your money, guys." They were all knackered at the end, tired at the end, you know. Bobo nicked my pizza at the end because we went into. So he owes me some pizza. But other than that. It was a good trip, and you know, then they were a nice bunch of people, you know. I had a really good time with them, and they try really hard. And people might criticise their methodology. I know they do, but you know, I can say that, you know, working with Cliff, he passionately believes it, and he does the best he can in the way he can. So good luck to him, you know.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, it's a very weird field, you know. It's a very
yeah. You're telling me.
Yeah. Well, I think part of it too is like there's, and I'm sure it was like this sort of in the early days of Bigfoot research, but I think it still pervades a lot of it too. Where like everybody wants to be the one that wins.
Yeah.
You know, everybody wants to be the one that gets the final thing.
Like jealousy.
Right. Like professional jealousy or just sort of like this innate competition amongst all the different researchers to be the one that gets the credit at the end of the day for breaking this thing finally.
Right.
And I think that drives a lot of sort of the vitriol or the debates and stuff.
You see, that doesn't happen. I'm not saying the outside world is some purist wonder camp, because it's not. But, you know, with stuff outside of North America, you know, the researchers that we have, we freely share our research with everybody else, and we're just interested in the debate. And that's the way it works, you know, and always has done. The Bigfoot community might seem to adopt a different approach, but you know, there's never been any problem. Anybody who's ever asked me, can you tell me information about your research, you know, I've shared it. You know that anyway. So, I think we all want the same end result for it to be proved. And I don't think jealousy and negativism is a good way to go about it. That's certainly not what you do in a scientific aspect. You'd share your results, yeah? So sharing your results is what it's all about. No, I'm not trying to preserve it for some personal crappy ego trip.
Exactly. Well, we need more guys like you out there doing the actual legwork of looking for this stuff.
But I love doing the legwork. You know that's what it's about, and that's the most I can do. You know, I'm aware of my own limitations in that. But if I can get any evidence that adds to the party, then I'll bring it on. But I'll always share it, Tim. And I'm not making any money from it either.
There you go. Someday, maybe.
Someday, maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Well, we gotta get you. You gotta get your own show. I don't know what the hell's taking so long. They gotta get you
on.
Yeah,
that would be great. Yeah, if I could do this full time, that would be the gig, wouldn't it? Then I wouldn't have to go back to my day job.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'd love it, but you never know. Never know. Fingers crossed, eh?
Yeah, maybe you can move, whatever you do over there, maybe you move to America and do that here or something.
Yeah, look, I really enjoy America. Seattle was a really nice city as well. I really like that. I had a good time. Everyone was great with me, you know, in America. Everyone was genuinely very friendly. I had the best of times there. It was cool.
Right. Really, now, the other people on the trip, this was like your crew from England?
Yeah, and obviously Laurie from America.
Yeah.
And Tom Cantrell came down, but only for a night or so, two nights, I think, in total. But he wasn't really part of it, but he sort of turned up because he's a friend of Laurie's, and he's a nice man, you know, I liked him. But yeah, they were from England, yeah.
Now, we've talked about the dangers here of these trips, and aside from the freak caterpillar thing, I'm going to presume that the American expedition was a lot less arduous than...
Yeah.
These trips into the jungles. What I'm building up to here is maybe I can come along sometime.
Yeah, you can. Well, something like that, yeah, easily. I mean, it wasn't physically arduous. I mean, there's some trekking involved, but nothing on the scale of what normally happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to say it was a difficult gig and we nearly died. Like, it wasn't like one of them Himalayas things where I nearly fall off a rock or Congo where I get shot at or anything like that. No, anybody could do what I did there. It was mentally very stretching, but physically, no.
Yeah.
Very, 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 very easy. Very easy.
Nice. All right. Well, then I'll have to start working out here and get myself in shape.
You need to do that, yeah. Pump those weights. Do a Rocky. Run in the snow. you don't need to do anything like that, yeah? You just need to be able to walk comfortably for a few miles, yeah, with a pack for North America. You don't have to be able to, like, you know, it's not mountaineering fitness or anything.
Yeah.
You could easily do it, Tim. You have no excuse now. No excuse.
Oh, no.
Let's get you sleeping out while a big creature comes ambling in. We'll see who shits himself first.
Oh, it'll probably be me. I will. You're gonna wake up. I'm gonna be out of there. I'm gonna be gone. I'll call you from like the nearest town and be like, "I saw the Bigfoot last night, dude. I'm out of here."
You do that, buddy, because I know I can run faster than you.
Oh boy. Well, it sounds really amazing, and I'm thrilled that this was such a great success for you, because,
you
know,
from a personal point of view,
I never really, I don't know what to expect, but given how fruitless some of these Bigfoot expeditions are, I figured, you know, that at best maybe you'd hear a little something or you know what I mean? It's like, such a good
thing. Maybe a bit of tree knocking if I was lucky, probably bugger all. Yeah, I thought that too. I thought that. I mean, I'd spoken to Laurie a lot, and we'd obviously developed a friendship. But I didn't expect anything like what happened. Who could, you know?
Right.
It would be beyond wildest dreams sort of expectation level. I would never have expected that. But that's why I want to go back to him, you know.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It sounds like something that got its hooks in you pretty seriously here.
Yeah, it has. Very much so. Very much so. It really has.
Now, what has... So you really... You sort of intimated you haven't really talked much about this. So has there been any reaction beyond the photo part? What have people said about what you've experienced? I mean, because you know how skeptical these people are.
I don't know. I've not really had any feedback on that.
Okay.
I think, you know, people, all I can do is say what happened, isn't it?
Right.
You know, and people can draw their own conclusions, but, you know, from my point of view, what I'm interested in is opinions about what it might be, what its behavior might be, what it's doing, you know, its size, its behavior, those sort of things. I mean, I'm interested in feedback on that, speculation on that, yeah?
Yeah.
Because that will take the story forward for me. So, you know, those sort of things really interest me.
Exactly.
And its behavior, because it's unique, and it would be unique among primates as well, clearly. So that's what I want to learn. You know, I welcome comments about what it is, what it's doing, what it's thinking, its behavior. Yeah, anything that's sensible along those lines, I would be very welcome to hear.
Well, did you get the sense that it was trying to intimidate you, or was it trying to communicate, you think, or what do you think was, you know, it's hard to really put your mind in the mind of an animal, even if it is somewhat more intelligent.
I get the, was definitely trying to communicate with Laurie, yeah, it communicated with Laurie on a number of occasions, yeah. She could do the bump thing and bump back, she could express a preference for food stuff, she could ask it a question and it would reply in different bumps, yeah. It would communicate with her on a basic level, you know, in that sense. Yeah, they definitely did that to some degree, which is surprising in itself. It is quick-tempered, but it's almost like a primate bluff in the same way that gorillas do, fake charges sometimes.
Yeah,
it's all bluster. I never really felt it was going to attack us, even when it was growling. I think it was a bluff thing. So I don't think it's super aggressive. I think it was I think it was demonstrating primate behaviour. But, you know, the answers to your questions, I don't know. I think it would take years and years of study.
Right.
Years and years of study to fully determine. I'm just skimming the surface, Tim. I really am, based on what I know. And I'm conscious of the fact that I'm skimming the surface. I mean, if it wanted to attack us, it could have killed us in 2 seconds, you know?
Right, right.
You know, when I was asleep, I wouldn't have known.
Right.
And, you know, that would have been it. The last thing I would have seen probably was its face. That would have been it.
Oh, boy. Now, has Laurie seen the creature, or has she only heard it?
She's never seen it. She's seen a peak of something sometime, but nothing substantive.
Hmm.
As far as I know, she's never seen it properly, no. But she's been scared. You know, that's the first time that she had spent nights out there, yeah? Normally she'll go for a day and come back. And when she went with her friend Bonnie and she's heard growls and stuff like that before, she's gone back. And, you know, it was really tough persuading her to stay after we got the photograph. It's quite intimidating. And there's other emotions wrapped up, I guess, with Laurie, because it's her dad's research and all of that, you know?
Right.
I've just been very lucky to have tagged on the back of that. It isn't my research. I've taken a punt on somebody. I played a hunch, essentially, Tim.
Yeah.
That's paid off based on my experiences of looking for other cryptids and learning from other researchers before I went. I played a hunch that's played off. It's really her and her research, I think, you know, and she deserves the credit for that, not me.
Well, it's pretty tremendous stuff, and I'll have to, maybe I should get her on the show sometime in the future.
Yeah, you should, yeah. She does show. Get to have a talk. I'm sure she'd come on it.
Because this is all very exciting. It really is. That's the real feeling from coming out of all this is that, you know, you've hit a rich vein of potential good stuff here.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's been a fantastic experience. It really has.
All right. So it's January. You don't know exactly what's going to happen in the new year aside from a return to America for a brief visit.
Well, I promise you I'll tell you when I know, yeah?
All right. Sounds
that?
Good.
I don't know yet, but when I know, you'll know, yeah?
There you go. Well, but usually in this January show, it's all sort of speculation anyway, so.
Yeah, it's all up in the air a bit, but I'll tell you as soon as I know. I'll give you my word.
Awesome. And what about, we talked about this last year, what about a follow-up book? You know, where you sort of update us on
point.
That stuff.
Well, I need to write that, and I should write that this year, yeah? I've got enough stuff since 2008 to write plenty of things. So I will write that in the next year, I promise.
All right. You're making a lot of promises here today.
Yeah, I'm making promises. But I've delivered on my promises, Tim, so I'm comfortable making them. They're not always as quick as they should be, but they always happen. So far I've promised you to let you know when I'll be back. I promised a trip to Boston, and I promised to try and get my book out, yeah?
There you go.
So those are promises that I'll keep.
Excellent, excellent. Well, Adam, I can't thank you enough for coming back on the show here, this annual tradition, your return to the Paranormal Radio Base Camp, and updating folks on all this. So, it's like I said, it's very exciting. You're really on the cusp of a lot of cool stuff. And is there any sort of timetable for the DNA findings?
No, I think with Sykes, he'll release it when he releases it, and yeah, nobody will know until he's ready. And that's the right approach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right approach.
Yeah, yeah. I just didn't know if it was like, how long has he had the stuff?
He's only begun testing in the last, if he'd begun testing, it's only been since Christmas, because he was only in the lab around Christmas. So, I mean, I presume he's started testing now or hasn't quite started yet. So, I don't know how long it'll take him.
Yeah.
I think at the earliest it'll be a few months yet, but we'll see.
All right, well, stay tuned, folks. ExtremeExpeditions.com and also Extreme Expeditions on Facebook. Check them out and befriend Adam Davies, because I really think that one of these days I'm gonna turn on the internet and he'll have broken something amazing and not an ankle. So I've always said Adam Davies is definitely someone to watch in the paranormal field across the board. So and I'm really psyched that you've become such a part of this program. I really appreciate it. And every year I look forward to these conversations, because I'm going to be looking back someday and say I knew Adam Davies back before he was famous for finding the Orang Pendek.
You've made one promise to me, Tim, North America, so I'm going to hold you to that. Don't you forget it.
Absolutely. All right. All right. I'm off to find some boots.
Good stuff.
All right, pal. Well, have a great year, and let's keep in touch.
Yeah, we will do. I'll speak to you soon, Tim.
Okay, buddy. Thanks again for coming on the show.
My pleasure. See you later.
That does it for this edition of BOA Audio Season 7. Big, big thanks to Adam Davies for coming back on the show and sharing so much revelatory information about his experiences of the past year. You can find out more from Adam Davies if you befriend him on Facebook. Just punch in Adam Davies into the Facebook search and you'll find him straight away. Befriend him and then you can learn all about his adventures in 2013. Moving right along now, it's time for BOA Audio Listener Feedback, and we've got three brief postings, so let's dive on in. The first one comes from Scott, who posted at the BOA Facebook page, No Hometown Listed. Here's what he has to say. Enjoyed the year-end show. Not sure if the cave goblins did turn out to be a hoax. I think it just petered out, so probably inconclusive. If you fancy doing a show on weird underground humanoids, W.M. Michael Mott is your man. His Caverns, Cauldrons, and Concealed Creatures is pretty much the definitive book on the matter. Scott. First of all, thank you for posting, Scott. Glad to hear you enjoyed the year-end show. I got the Cave Goblin post from someone on the BOA Facebook page, and they said it was a hoax, so I may have been mistaken. I did warn you all that the Year in Review episode was the most haphazard edition ever, so we may have just put out a whole bunch of incorrect information for the listeners as we were throwing it all together. But I will look further into the Cave Goblin story to see if it is a hoax or if it was just something that never got followed up on. And, Scott, if you are a listener of the program, you should definitely know that I would love to do a show on weird underground humanoids. That sounds fantastic. So I have put down W.M. Michael Mott's name here on the BOA to investigate list, and I definitely want to pick up Caverns, Cauldrons, and Concealed Creatures, because that sounds amazing and definitely a topic I would love to explore on the program. So thank you very much for that tip. Hopefully you'll be hearing from Mr. Mott on BOA Audio sometime very soon. Continuing the theme of incorrect information stated on the program, Arthur then writes in saying that the devices spread around the world are called eggs. There are 36 to 50 of them and are run by someone at Princeton University. I heard it from Greg Braden. He uses that research.
Dmitry Medvedev is Prime Minister of Russia. He was president before Putin. They just switched places. Arthur. That's sort of a half correction, because I believe I did call them the Princeton Eggs, and I definitely botched Dmitry Medvedev's role in Russian politics. So thank you very much, Arthur, for writing in and correcting me on that. Dmitry Medvedev is not the vice president of Russia. He is the prime minister. How does Russia have a president and a prime minister? That is totally confusing. I'm more baffled, I think, than I was before I read this email. But thank you for writing in, Arthur. Final email comes from Hannah, who says, I know you get a million messages like this, so I'll be brief. Wanted to tell you that I truly appreciate what you do. Loved the Stanton Friedman interviews, and I love you for the Bruce Rucks trilogy. The most recent interview this past Thanksgiving was amazing. You are the coolest person that I have never met, and I hope you keep doing what you are doing for as long as you can. It certainly gives people like me hope that there are other like-minded individuals out there. So thank you. Hannah. Wow, Hannah. Thank you very much. I'm blushing here. I'm just totally humbled by this email, although I was confused. At first I thought you called me the coolest person that you had ever met, even though we've never met before. And I'm sure you've met many cooler people than me, Hannah. I cannot possibly be the coolest person that you have ever or never met, really. But I will take the compliment, because it is one of the nicest things that anyone's ever said about me, that I'm the coolest person that they have never met. That might be my epitaph, I think. The coolest person that you never met. Tim Banal. I'm chuckling here. Thank you very much, Hannah. I really do appreciate it. I'm really psyched that you enjoyed the Stanton Friedman interviews and the Bruce Rucks trilogy. We may have just passed through the holidays, but as I'm sure many of you know, they'll be here before we know it, and we'll be doing it all once again with Bruce Rucks and Stanton Friedman in 2013. Thank you once again for writing in, Hannah. And on that note, since I want to get the program out to folks here this Friday afternoon, let's close up the BOA Audio Listener Feedback Mailbag. Big, big thanks to Hannah, Arthur, and Scott for writing in on this week's installment. And if you would like to be a part of future editions of BOA Audio Listener Feedback, please allow me to provide you with the various means to contact me. You can write to boaaudio@hotmail.com, or you can head on over to banalofamerica.com, B-I-N-N-A-L-L of America.com, and click the contact button. Additionally, if you are looking for something a little more interactive, you can join up at the official BOA forum, theusofe.com, theusofe.com. It is BOA's paranormal playground, where we discuss the esoteric and pop culture. Beyond that, I'm also on Facebook and Twitter, so just punch in Banal on the various search engines, and you will find me there. Feel free to befriend me, follow me, or poke me. It's all good, and I'd be happy to have you as part of my online circle of friends. And before I finish up the means to take part in BOA Audio Listener Feedback, it's time for our weekly update on the Banal of America Facebook page. Since the last time you heard from me, we've had quite a boon of likes. Right now, I'm looking at it here. We are sitting at 886 likes on Facebook. So we're very close. We are very close to the mythical and meaningless 1,000. And we are only 14 likes away from the very sexy round number of 900, which will, of course, earn the 900th liker a shout-out here on the program. So if you're listening to the show right now and you have not liked us on Facebook, you are very close to earning a shout-out here at the end of the program. Just be our 900th like. That is an update on the Banal of America Facebook page. It bears repeating, though, once again, folks. I laugh about it to my friends here. I get nothing for these likes. It is really just an ego boost and a moronic number that I follow from time to time. So please do not think that I'm trolling for likes here at the end of the program. I actually find it rather hilarious that they track these things. Up next, it is time to thank the outstanding and esteemed BOA staff, Leslie, Chiron, Regan Lee, Joe V, Tina Senna, Richard Thomas, Marla Pena, Bruce Pretty, Tony Morrill, and our webmaster, Jeremy Boston. Since the last time you heard from me on the program, we have posted an all-new Trickster's Realm from Regan Lee, where she decries the use of dogs in Bigfoot hunts. Very timely edition of Trickster's Realm, considering this conversation here this week with Adam Davies. Head on over to Banal of America to check that out. And I have got the wheels in motion for some new developments at BOA. I cannot say anything about it beyond that, but I can tell you that the wheels are in motion. So, as always, stay tuned to Banal of America for your esoteric news and opinion needs. Now comes the time in the program where I take my hat off and pass it around to the BOA audio listeners and ask you to make a donation to the Banal of America franchise. How do you do that? That's simple. Head on over to BOA and click the PayPal button. That'll take you to PayPal. They'll walk you through the process. It's safe, secure, and simple. If you do not trust the internet and would like to send us a donation via snail mail, you can do so by writing to Tim Banal, P.O. Box 232, Pinehurst, Mass. 01866. And you can find the complete address at Banal of America under the PayPal button. If you do send us a donation, please make it payable to Tim Banal and not Banal of America, because my bank is anal and they will not honor those donations. And please include some means of correspondence so I can reach out to you and thank you for your donation. As always, it bears repeating, folks, no donation is too small, and all donations go towards Banal of America and BOA Audio to help keep the entire franchise up and running, freely available, and commercial-free for all of our great readers and listeners the world over. On the next edition of BOA Audio, we wrap up our marathon of returning guests with the long-awaited epic 3-hour conversation with BOA Audio friend Paul Kimball concerning his new book, The Other Side of Truth. This conversation has been sitting here on my hard drive for far too long, and it is time to unleash it on the BOA Audio listeners. It is, as I have been saying week after week, an epic conversation spanning 3+ hours covering ufology, spirituality, politics, all kinds of topics. It is a jam session, really like no other, and digs deep into Paul's book, The Other Side of Truth, as well as his mindset on a whole variety of paranormal topics. So it is definitely one for the books, and it is the next edition of BOA Audio. Following that, we begin rolling out some all-new guests for the BOA Audio listeners here in 2013. Folks you've never heard on the program before. I've already got a couple of those in the can, and I've scheduled quite a few more as well. Cannot wait to bring these names to the BOA Audio listeners, because they are tremendous. Stay tuned, my friends. And on that note, we close the book on this edition of the program. Once again, big, big thanks to Adam Davies. Thanks to Hannah, Arthur, and Scott for their correspondences on BOA Audio listener feedback. And, of course, enormous thanks to all you folks out there, the hardcore BOA Audio listeners, the people who tune in to the very end of the program, even as I'm losing my voice here, wrapping up the show. Thank you for your enduring support of this program. It is truly humbling and appreciated, my friends. Thank you so much for making BOA Audio a part of your esoteric audio playlist. Until next time, this is Tim Banal, thanking you once again for listening and signing off.